Business Talk, WSB's Money Matters, is on the air on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB, brought to you by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, and Sandy Springs. Money Matters is a live call-in talk show about money, investing, and how to grow and keep what you have. Your host is certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta Capital Investment Advisors, Wes Moss.
Is the American way.
Good morning and welcome to a, call it a very, very wet weekend. What, the most rain since 1916 here in the beginning of May? Talk about having three children stuck inside. Not as fun as you might think. I don't know what we're going to have to do with these children today. But good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, certified financial planner here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Of course, we're live, 404-872-0750. And another, I'm not going to call it a wild week in the market, but just so many things happening and so much movement and so much to think about as an investor as we are stuck between a rock and a hard place. The market on one end is at an all-time high, the Dow hitting 15,000 this week. It's never hit 15,000 before. It didn't quite close there, but we've never seen Dow 15,000 before. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have cash paying zero. Bonds paying virtually nothing. So what do we do as investors? We're going to talk about that today. And by the way, we have a brand new ETF of the week. We haven't ever talked about this one before. And that, of course, at 9:24. So stay tuned for that. But another week, the trend is higher. The trend is better. Actually, better than good. Jobs were strong, really more than strong, and the Dow above 15,000. Remember when the Dow was at 6,000 or around 6,000? It really wasn't even that long ago. Go back 50 months. Now, lots happened in 50 months. I've had, let's see, two more kids. I've moved twice, been to Michigan probably 8 times. We've seen a tsunami in Japan. We've had a couple of really nasty hurricanes here in the U.S., an oil spill in the Gulf. We had a flash crash. We had a European debt crisis that has crept up now 3 or 4 separate times. We've had complete uprisings in the Middle East. We've had a credit downgrade here in the United States for our debt overall. We've seen record levels of our own federal debt. We have a brand new higher tax regime that we're now under, a sequester, yet here we are at 15,000 on the Dow. It's almost hard to believe. Remember the unemployment rate? That was also at 10% at one point. That was just in 2009. It seems like it was yesterday. The U6, that's the underemployment rate, was well over 16%. Really just staggering numbers. And today, the rate as of this week, for according to the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, now down to 7.5%. So from 10% down to 7.5%. For the month of April, we added 165,000 jobs. The 7.5%, that level now as the unemployment rate, that's the lowest level we've seen since December of 2008. And the jobs data for March was also, really March and February and March was revised up, another 114,000 jobs. So these are some real increases for an area of the economy which has been unemployment, again, a very critical area of the economy that's been stuck in the mud compared to some of the other areas that have shown other signs of life. So the stock market has been better than good and better than the employment rate, let's say. Housing has been on a tear, going back up to getting gains where we've seen now almost 10% gains year over year on a national basis. Well above that, if you look at just the state here of Georgia and particularly Atlanta. And then auto sales have gone from barely selling anything to 14, 15, almost 16 million cars at an annual pace. So we've had some areas really rebound sharply, and other areas like employment just kind of slowly get better. I went back to the beginning of the year, January, and then added up January, February, March, April. How much have we added as an economy? And this is a staggering number. We have added over 750,000 jobs, 750,000 new jobs to the tally for 2013. So we have had a stock market that has gotten considerably better. We've been an economy that has shown some signs of weakness, been kind of off and on and off and on, and now we're back. If we had to measure as of what we saw just this past week, particularly with employment, we're back to the on mode, and things are looking better and better. Consumer confidence numbers, again, were up this week. So all of a sudden, things look awfully bright as we head into what typically are the doldrums of the summer. Remember, sell in May and go away. You look at historically the returns from May to October, very, very small compared to the months of November back to the end of April. That's where the stock market historically has seen a lot of its gains. I don't love looking back at these rules because there's so many geopolitical factors, economic factors, world factors that are so impactful that we could have the greatest May that we've seen in decades or the worst May that we've seen in decades because of some geopolitical events. So I don't put a lot of stock necessarily into some of these historical trends, but here we are at a point where the market's gotten better, the economy's clearly better, the big areas that we look at and give us sentiment about the economy, particularly housing and employment, are clearly getting better. Now you as an investor have to sit back and say, wait a minute, where do we go now? We're at another four-way stop. It's another week with another market high and another period of time where we're saying, what do we do? I may be too conservative in my portfolio, but I also don't want to get into an all-stock portfolio knowing that we are an all-time high. What if we go into a 20% correction tomorrow and I've just put all this money to work? Do I feel as though I just bought in at a market high? So we have to be very careful, and I'm starting to see some signs of this where investors are so frustrated, let's say that they haven't been invested or they've been way too conservative, that now they're ready to get back in the market. And that makes me concerned just a little bit. Now, and I want to make sure that investors don't get greedy. We have very short memories. When things are bad, we want to get out. We want to stay safe, and we're comfortable staying safe even though the market might start rallying. But that wears on you as an individual. And it wears on you when you see the Dow up 100 or 200 points in a day on the news and you're not participating. And it wears on you when your neighbor says, wow, what a great year we've had. I can't believe my 401k is up 15% already this year. Isn't that amazing? And it wears on you when we hear stories about investors that have gone from the lows in 2009 to getting all their money back. And then some, and you've missed the party, boats left the harbor, and you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, maybe now is the time for us to get back in and participate in the stock market. And that is a dangerous game. Because what you're effectively doing there by being out of the market, now trying to get back into the market, is you're trying to time the market. And you and I both know, we know deep in our hearts and in our minds that that is an impossible game. It's an impossible game because we know that the smartest people on the planet, people that we have respect for like Warren Buffett, will tell you that even he can't do it. Peter Lynch from the famous mutual fund manager from Fidelity Magellan, he'll tell you even he can't do it. So what do you do then at this stage? If the smartest minds on the planet can't, then what do you and I do? And the answer, very simply, is that if we resign to the fact that we're not going to get greedy, then we have to go back to the fundamentals. And those that starts, number one, with being careful and calming down and understanding how long until you need the money that you're ready to reposition, reinvest, or just do something different with. You have to understand what the time frame on that money is. I had calls this week. Hey, I'm going to have money for the next 6 months, and then I'm going to spend it on a house. How do we invest that, Wes? I'd like to get some sort of return over the next 6 months in this money that I'm going to spend on a kitchen or a house or a bathroom. Well, whatever happened to keeping money safe that you're about to use in the next 6 months? Whatever happened to keeping money safe that you're going to use in the next 12 months? Those are the fundamentals of planning. Those are the fundamentals of investing. Let's not forget those just because the Dow's at a brand new high. We start to feel more confident and we say, well, hey, things are going well. Let's get in. Well, it's a scarier time and a more dangerous time to jump headfirst in now than it was back in the dark days of 2009 when the market was at 6,600 on the Dow. You don't want to jump into a swimming pool now that we're at 15,000. Much safer to do so when we were at a market low, but it's hard for investors to do that. So, number one, we have to remember to be careful, calm down, understand how long until you need the money that you're about ready to put back to work. So if it's two-year money, maybe we can start to do a little bit more investing, but that has to be really conservative. If it's five-year money, then we can start to look at the stock market. Then we can start to look at dividend payers. But if you look at a broader picture for how you're positioning your 403B, if you're a teacher, or your TSP plan, if you're working for the CDC right here in Atlanta, the Thrift Savings Plan from the government, or your 401K plan that so many of us have at our companies, remember the balance of those buckets I probably don't talk enough about. It's been a little while since I've really hit on buckets. Remember, what are they? Well, there's four of them. There's the cash bucket that it's really not an investment bucket. It's just the safety bucket. We're right now we're getting zero return in the cash bucket. In fact, we're losing money on a real basis because inflation is running at 1.5%. Let's say 2% and our cash is getting zero. That means we're really losing. It's a slow bleed of 2% a year. So that's not even an investment bucket. That's just a savings bucket. Then we have three other places to put our money. We have the income bucket, the growth bucket, and then the anything in between bucket. I call it alternative income. It's something that is not necessarily, doesn't fit neatly into either one. So the income bucket, various types of bonds. And again, at this stage of the game, as interest rates are very low and headed higher, that is a bucket that you have to be very careful about. It's not a throwaway bucket. There are plenty of ways to do okay in bonds over the next several years. We just have to choose our spots, and we're going to talk about some of those areas. Then we go to the growth bucket. Well, what can you do in that? Well, we can do anything from growth stocks that don't pay any dividends that we own just for pure appreciation, all the way to dividend payers that are slower growers that return cash to us on a quarterly basis. We take those two ends of the continuum, slower growing, higher dividend paying stocks with faster growing, no dividend payers, and we think to ourselves, well, what's an appropriate balance for me and the family? And if you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s, the answer is likely a combination of both of those areas. If you are 60 or 70, the answer is, at least in my opinion, you have to be much more tilted towards and have exposure to dividend payers and companies that are less volatile. They're less of a roller coaster ride and more steady as she goes with dividend payers. And that's what the ETF of the week is all about as soon as we get back here from a quick break. So more about how to make that balance work for you as an investor so that you don't get greedy and get burned as the market's reaching these brand new highs. I want us to be careful. And number two, we'll talk about a real example of a dividend-paying ETF as soon as we get back from break. I'm your host, Wes Moss, Certified Financial Planner, here every Sunday morning on News Talk WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. Time for ETF of the week. It's 9:25. This week, this is a brand new one, never done this before, the Schwab Dividend ETF, U.S. Dividend ETF, symbols SCHD. Yield on this is 2.81%, so not a bad yielder when the 10-year Treasury is yielding about 1.7, by the way. So these are stocks that are yielding almost 3% in an aggregate basket. What are the expenses on this extremely low-priced ETF? Well, they're 0.07%. Those are the annual expenses. And by the way, if you have an account at Schwab to buy this ETF, there's not even a transaction fee. And then you can put it on dividend reinvest, and there's no transaction fee for that. So this is about as close to free as you can get. Now, what's inside this ETF? That's really what is more important. It's not that it's free that we want to buy. It's not that it's not just because it's low expense. It's because we have some areas that maybe will make some sense in the long term or over the long term for you. Now, what are the size of the 100 holdings that are inside this ETF? And by the way, there's not a lot of turnover here. Only about 18% turnover. That means out of the 100 stocks, they may only sell 9 and buy 9. So 18 for the year in general. Now, average size about $73 billion market cap. So 90% of these companies are in the giant to large group, the other 10% in middle-sized companies. Well, what kind of companies? 24% consumer staples, 15% industrials, And then 14% technology, very, very little exposure to utilities. Now, what are some of the companies? Well, in tech, companies like Microsoft and Intel. In healthcare, companies like Eli Lilly, Bristol Myers, and Johnson & Johnson. How about some consumer staple companies? Well, Coke and Pepsi, Procter & Gamble, and Colgate-Palmolive. Exxon and Chevron. DuPont and Honeywell and Boeing. So a lot of exposure to big companies that you would probably recognize that have been around for a very long time and have been able to continue to pay dividends. So an example of a company that you might, or an ETF you want to take a look at. But again, remember, these aren't recommendations. These are just ideas for you to go research and talk to your advisor about. So take a look at this. Do your own homework. We'll be right back from break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. You're probably tuning in this morning because you won that pot of money watching the Kentucky Derby last night. I'm sure that's why you're tuning in. You knew Orb was going to win. You paid $50 to get into a pot that was several thousand, and you walked with a lot of cash, and you're tuning in this morning to figure out what to do with it. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. I'm your host, Wes Moss, Certified Financial Planner. Happy to be here with you on this rainy weekend. Call it a Sunday morning where it looks like we're going to get. Yeah, it looks like it's even raining now a little bit still. The most rain since 1916. What is that about? Well, if you have children playing baseball, it means that half of your games have been canceled this year. And it means that if you're on Lake Lanier, the lake is finally back up and above, I think, where it's ever been. So I'm happy for everybody that's north of the city in beautiful Lake Lanier. So, good morning. A lot of calls on hold here. We've been talking about this market, how not to be greedy. We just talked about a new ETF of the week, the Schwab Dividend U.S. Equity ETF, symbol CSCHD. And it's time to go to the phones and answer your calls and questions. Don't have a lot of guests on Money Matters because you're my guest, and I get up every Sunday morning, come in here, so that I can talk with you and try to help you make decisions. If you're leaning one direction, hey, I'm about to do something financially, buy an annuity, or I'm about to roll over my 401k, or I'm about to retire, and I'm not sure if I can quite do it, I'm going to start asking people, well, this, how about this guy on Sunday morning I keep hearing? Why don't I ask him? If I'm going to ask my neighbor, why don't I ask this guy too? And why don't I ask the Money Matters team? And that's what we do. So we're live here in the studio, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And I have had an influx of people really heavily considering retirement lately. A lot of the people I've worked with for many years now, all of the sudden, are saying, you know, I think it might be time to retire. And I want to go over these retirement numbers. Is it worth doing? Can I actually do it right now? Do I have to wait another year, 2 years, 3 years? Interestingly, the thought here, the reason I'm thinking that this is happening is that we've had a pretty darn good market. We're getting a little bit of confidence back. And families are saying to themselves, am I going to keep slogging away at a job that I'm not loving, that I've been doing for 30 years? Do I have to take that job to 35 or 40? Or can I call it quits right now, maybe do something else, maybe an encore career, another great term I learned this week from a client, maybe do an encore career, maybe not making as much money, but enough so I don't have to tap into my investments too early. If I can find something that's an encore career, maybe I can make these numbers work. And I think I've been seeing an influx of this because things have gotten a lot better, and 401k balances look a lot better. And your pension balances, that if you are fortunate enough or smart enough or lucky enough, whatever you want to call it, to have a pension, those numbers typically look a little bit better than they did in years past because they typically go up a little bit every single year you wait to actually take them. So let's again go to the phones and answer your calls and your questions. Again, live. I'm live. It's the, yes, this is the rainy weekend that we're all together. I don't know. I know that no one's out ready to go play golf, or probably not a whole lot of activity outside because it is muddy and it's rainy and it's wet. So maybe you're just in the kitchen drinking coffee or headed to church. Then you're with us, so thank you. And again, the number here, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ryan, where are we starting here? We've got a lot of calls on hold. We'll start with Carl, who joins us from Suwannee. Hey, Carl, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Wes. I'd probably prefer mutual funds over paramutual betting anytime, so.
Well, at least you heard that. Let's see, I just got a text here. Let's see, this is a listener who won $75 at a derby party, thinking of reinvesting at the Preakness. And that,
wow.
I'd say yes. I think that's genius.
Yeah.
That's genius. I would double down for the Preakness. And then what's the third one? The Belmont Stakes, right? You could triple down. What's going on? How can I help, Carl?
Yeah, Wes, in assessing whether to continue adding to the market, I wonder where the PEs of the market, S&P, whatever, were back in March 2009 versus where they are today.
So, okay, so here's what Carl's talking about here. And at the risk of getting too math heavy on a Sunday morning, I want to talk about what's really important about what Carl's asking about for anybody that's wondering what is the PE, why is that relevant, what does PE even really stand for, what does it mean? Well, first of all, Carl's asking about price to earnings, and this is the measure of what we're technically paying for the stock market in general relative to what all those companies inside of the stock market are actually earning. So it's a pretty simple ratio. It's just the price of a stock divided by the earnings that a stock has. We also look at it on a global level, so we look at the PE multiple for the entire market. So let's do some simple numbers here to give you an idea of what we're talking about. The S&P is trading right now right around 1,600. But let's just round it off to 1,600. And companies in aggregate are earning about $100 for the group. So we just take 1,600 divided by 100, and that means the multiple, the price-earnings multiple, is 16. That's where it stands. That's right around where it is right now. There's lots of measures of it. There's the GAAP, which is the generalized or acceptable accounting standards that all companies that are publicly traded have to adhere to. There's non-GAAP. There's the Shiller model, which is another way of measuring a rolling price to earnings multiple. Well, let's just look at regular, good old fashioned price to earnings that are GAAP, GAAP. What does that look like historically? And I just so happen to have this chart in my wallet. It's that important to go back historically. And I typically look. There's an 87 year chart that I look at that shows earnings that go all the way back to the year 2000 or 1926 until today, and what the market multiple has really been. So let's go back for a second. We know that the market multiple right now, we're paying about 16 times earnings. If you go back to the dark days where the market was really low, Carl,
yeah,
in 2009, my chart shows me that at one point the multiple got down to about 11. And has been slowly climbing ever since. Now, that's mostly because, yes, earnings have grown, but we've had the market growing, let's say, even a little bit faster than earnings have been growing. So we look at where do we stand relative to history? Well, let's go back. What's the average? What's the median for the entire period, the whole 87 years? The median is 17. So if we go back, what's the median over 25 years? The last 25 years, the median is 25. In the last 50 years, the median is 19. Now, part of the reason it's a little higher than where we are right now is that we did have a period of time where the multiple was really high back in 2008 and 2009 when the market got we had these really extreme dislocations. And the multiple was really high because earnings literally dropped to almost nothing for a short period of time. If you looked at December 2008, earnings were so low that the earnings for the year were running at $14. Now, it wasn't $14 for the entire year, but we had a month or two there where earnings were so low that extrapolated over the whole year, they were almost went down to zero. So you get almost an infinite P-E ratio at that point. But that's why we got to look at the 25-year, the 50-year, and then the whole period. What's more relevant, Carl, is that over time, it's been around 17. Today we're at 16. So that's a really important number to try to wrap our arms around, because what it means to me is that the multiple, or what you're paying to jump into stocks today, isn't necessarily cheap because it's close to the long-term average, 16. The average is 17. Okay, it's the dollar cheaper. But it's also not, it's definitely not expensive. And that's what makes us still be okay with being or participating in the stock side of the market. Again, not cheap, but also not expensive. The other important factor here is you have to look at it, what are earnings in the stock market relative to where they've been historically? Well, the market's at an all-time high. That's scary to me, right? And I think as any investor that you look in the news, you hear CNBC saying, all-time high, Dow 15,000, never been there before. Well, what about earnings? I hope they're there. And the answer is yes, they are. Earnings have never been this high. This is the highest or the most companies have earned ever in the history of our nation. So the earnings right now are somewhat in line with stocks. Here's another thing that's important. What about relative to what else we can do with our money? Well, what's the other big bucket that we can put our money in? That's the income bucket, and that's bonds. Well, where are interest rates? Well, they're lower than they've ever been, and inflation is about as low as it's ever been. So you can almost make the argument that you could pay more for stocks because relative to some of the other options you have as an investor, stocks look relatively better than bonds because bonds are trading way below what they typically pay. So if the 10-year Treasury is typically going to pay 4% and today it's paying 1.7%, then bonds are even a worse value than what you're paying for stocks. So that's kind of how I'm looking at this. I think it's a really important. The reason I took your call is that I think it's important to have this discussion. Are stocks relatively expensive or not for any investor right now? And then the kind of the last point I wanted to make here is that, well, what kind of dividends are stocks paying? Well, we're also at the highest run rate in aggregate for dividends as well. So the S&P 500 is going to pay out about $30 worth of dividends right now. Historically, that's the highest amount in aggregate that we've ever seen the S&P 500 pay out as well. So not only are earnings at a high, interest rates are at a low, inflation at a low, but dividends that are actually getting paid out to you as an investor are at an all-time high. So I think all of that to say, a very important discussion here, that we're kind of at fair value. All that to say, we're trading around right around where we should be. But we also know that the stock market can be heavily influenced by emotion. And that emotion itself can take a price that's appropriate and make it 20% too expensive or 20% too cheap. And but right now, we're probably right in the middle of those two areas. It's certainly not expensive, but it's definitely not cheap. We're somewhere stuck right in the middle.
Right.
So that's it.
Thanks.
I bet you poor Carl didn't expect all that much on looking at historical P.E. ratios. I just luckily had a chart with me that goes all the way back to 1926 from Standard & Poor's. It's a Ned Davis study that I love to just keep with me, and it's important, and we're right stuck in the middle. Well, who are those big dividend payers? Well, ExxonMobil is the biggest, by the way. ExxonMobil pays out $10 billion in dividends in any given year. At least that's the level they are right now. Apple is going to pay out $9.9 billion in dividends. AT&T is going to pay $9.6 billion in dividends. Microsoft is going to pay $6.7 billion in dividends. Procter & Gamble will pay $6.1 billion worth of dividends. So we have these big companies that, yes, they've gotten to be behemoth companies, but as they continue to grow, well, so do their dividends. And that dividend has to – if the dividend yield is going to stay at 2.5% or 3% and the company keeps growing – well, if the dividend yield is going to stay at an attractive level, those companies have to keep ratcheting up what they're paying out. So they, as they earn more, they pay out more. They earn more, they pay out more. And that's exactly what we continue to see from some of these really healthy companies that have plenty of profit and plenty of room to share what they're earning. And that's that the examples I just gave you, Exxon, Apple, AT&T is the third biggest, by the way, at $9.6 billion, then GE, then Chevron, then J&J, then Microsoft. These are companies that are really returning cash to you as investors. When we get back from break, we'll have more phone calls. We'll dive deeper into all of this. The number here live in the studio, 404-872-0750. 0750. If you've had a financial question that's just been bugging you or bothering you, me and the Money Matters team, we're happy to give you our take on it. You can also call me at 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, Certified Financial Planner, here on News Talk WSB.
Helping you to make more and worry less. Call with your money questions at 404-872-0750 or toll free at 1-800-WSB-TALK. Now back to investment strategist Wes Moss on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. I always love these market facts. Based on the last 80 years, and we've been going way back today, 1933 until 2012, the S&P is likely, just as likely, to go up 26% as a total return in any single or given calendar year as it is to be negative, a total negative in any given year. So both events, again, up 26% or down for the year, that's happened 20 times over the last 80 years. Both events have occurred 20 times over the last 80-year period. That's just the way the market is. It's a yo-yo. It's a roller coaster. And that's why we're trying for you to give you some sort of solution that'll bridge the gap between making money and being able to sleep well at night. And the answer that is very clear to me, beyond just being careful and keeping a level head, is balance. The balance of how you allocate your assets. Because if you can get the balance right, A, that means you're not getting greedy inherently, meaning you're going to have some sort of counterbalance if the market does drop. And that's why we still are going to hold different types of bonds. It means we're going to still have assets that are not just stock-oriented. But beyond that, the income piece of all of that, the being an income investor, is the steadiness in all of it. Meaning that if I can understand what my portfolio yield is at the beginning of the year, whether it's 3 or 4 or 5% for my overall portfolio, then regardless of what happens to the stock market, I know that I'll generate about that much in some sort of cash flow. Well, where does the cash flow come from? Very simple. Dividends that come from stocks, interest that comes from various types of bonds, and then distributions that come from, well, pretty much everywhere else. They come from closed-end funds and REITs and energy royalty trusts and master limited partnerships. Those are the pipeline companies. Those three areas, dividends, interest, and distributions, they add up very simply to a portfolio yield. And a portfolio yield is something that's predictable. You can count on it in what is otherwise a very unpredictable stock market. So that's why that's a big part of our discussion here on Money Matters. That's why it's a big part of the show. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team throughout the week, easy to do so. You can go to our old-fashioned website, yourwealth.com, yourwealth.com. If you're on Facebook, you can find me, Wes Moss Money Matters, on Facebook. Or you can just email me. Very easy to do. Radio, R-A-D-I-O, at yourwealth.com. Stick with us. We've got more when we come back. We're live this morning, so call me with your questions. 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750 if you have a question for the 10 o'clock hour. We'll be back with more Money Matters here on News Talk WSB.